Nana Shastra Vacharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Vajana Nandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatano Ragujago Sri Jiva Gopalako. So we can recite the translation together also. After my respectful obeisances under the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they're honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of, because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis, and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. You'll see that there's so many chapters, it goes on to the next page also, but you'll see that these chapters are divided into four divisions, parts 1, 2, 3 and 4. Now, Srila Rupa Goswami, he was instructed by Lord Chaitanya. He was instructed, and also Srila Sanatana Goswami, they were both instructed very elaborately by Lord Chaitanya all about this, the science of devotional service, right from the very beginnings of devotional service, when a person is coming to Krishna consciousness, right from that point, right through to the highest level of pure devotional service in Vrindavan, and ultimately the loving relationships of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya instructed both of them. Those of you who have read Chaitanya Charitamrita, how many of you have read Chaitanya Charitamrita? One, two, three. Oh, it's a little disappointing. I thought more of you would have. Anyway, so I'm sure you will when you get the chance. So you would have seen there, at the end of the Madhya Leela, the last about seven or eight chapters. First of all, it's the teachings, Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Rupa Goswami. And then actually the main part is Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatana Goswami. So these two, who are the leaders of the six Goswamis actually, Sanatana Goswami is the eldest by age of the six Goswamis. He's the elder brother of Rupa Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami, he's counted as being the spiritual master, or one of the spiritual masters of Rupa Goswami. In fact, we'll be reading today how Rupa Goswami offers prayers to Sanatana Goswami as a spiritual master. So in that sense, Sanatana Goswami is like the senior member, actually, of the six Goswamis. Although, having said that, Rupa Goswami's writings and teachings generally are taken to be more important. So you could say philosophically or spiritually, generally Rupa Goswami is actually seen as being the leader of the six Goswamis. Anyway, they're both the two most important members of the six Goswamis. And they were instructed directly by Lord Chaitanya. And then they, later on, those same things they are taught by Lord Chaitanya, they then presented in their own words, in their own writings. Of course, Sanatana Goswami's writings, we don't really, Prabhupada didn't translate any of them. And they're there like Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But Srila Rupa Goswami's teachings, Srila Prabhupada translated two of Rupa Goswami's books. One is this nectar of devotion. The other is, who knows the other one? Nectar of instruction, Upadeshamrita. Nectar of instruction. So they're very important books. And as we go through Nectar of Devotion, actually Prabhupada has presented Nectar of Devotion as what he calls a summary study, which is something different from, like with Srimad Bhagavatam, where it's verse by verse, Bhagavad Gita and so on. Verse by verse with translation and detail, and then purport, and then the next verse. So summary study is a little different. It's a sort of broader approach in which Srila Prabhupada, he is summarizing, and in certain cases giving a little more emphasis or explaining a little more elaborately some points which he feels need to be explained more considering his audience. So it's not exactly the same as just a straight translation verse by verse with purports. Although it's not by any means a different book from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In fact, as we go through the introduction, I'll show you how Prabhupada is actually presented without referring to the verses. He's just presented in a prose form, verse by verse, the initial series of verses which appears in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. So these teachings here, one thing we're going to be doing is extracting from Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'll do it myself, some of the main verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which were actually spoken initially by Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami or Sanatan Goswami, and then have been included in here by Rupa Goswami. So in this way you'll see the connection between Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, and also Sanatan Goswami, in fact, and how Rupa Goswami is sort of synthesizing all these most important teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So now, just to get back to the book here, the table of contents, there are four parts. There's an eastern part, because this is an ocean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Actually, it literally translates to mean Bhakti, of course, is devotional service. Rasa means mellow or taste. Amrita means nectar, eternal nectar. And Sindhu means ocean, literally. So if we're to give a literal translation of this title, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it means the nectar of the ocean of the mellows of devotional service, like that. Or the eternal nectar of the ocean of the mellows of devotional service. Although Prabhupada has presented it as nectar of devotion. So an ocean has four sides: east, west, north and south. So the ocean of the nectar of devotional service, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the book, it also has four sides. And these are the four parts. So part one is the eastern side. Part two, actually, I think is the northern side. Well, I'll have to check on which sides these other parts are. But the part one is the eastern side. And in fact, our course will be to study part one. That is actually our course. Let's just have a look at the chapter headings here on the contents page for part one. So, I'll write some of this out. This now, we are also going to be having little tests from time to time. Lots of fun. I knew you'd like that. We know what you like. Okay, so, now part one is actually further divided. Here, of course, there's 19 chapters. But these chapters are grouped in certain ways. So there are four parts to part one. Now, write this down, because you will be asked this in the first test. We're very charitable, so we'll tell you all the questions and all the answers. So all you have to do is remember. Okay, so the first part is... introduction. And that consists of, as it appears here, consists of the introduction in the book and chapter one. Okay. That is a general introduction to the subject matter. Then, let us see here. Then we have, so that's number one. Then number two is the discussion of sadhana bhakti. Do we have something for... Where's that clock? Can I have that clock from the back there? Or something? Is it really a whiteboard marker? Or? Oh, well, anyway. Okay. Oh, I see. Okay, so... Right. So sadhana bhakti, I don't know if you can read that. You're all familiar with the term. So sadhana bhakti is in two divisions, subdivisions, so to speak, dividing sadhana bhakti and raganuga sadhana bhakti. And they are discussed, let's see, chapter 2 to chapter 14 is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and chapters 15 and 16 are discussing Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. So, just a self-evident point is that seeing this first part is 19 chapters, and Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is discussed from chapter 2 to 14. Actually, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is quantitatively at least the major subject matter of this first part. Okay, so now 3 is Bhava Bhakti. Very elevated stage of pure devotional service, and this is discussed in chapters 17 and 18. 18. Okay. Then the last part is Prema Bhakti. Which is the last chapter, chapter 19. So these then are the four parts of part one, or four subparts, subdivisions of part one. Now, they're actually, in other words, they're introducing the whole subject of Bhakti Yoga. Everything is there. Of course, as you'll see, the higher stages, Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, are only discussed briefly. But what we'll be studying is giving a nice basic description of them so we can at least understand those things. Then of course, as you see the contents here, part 2, part 3, part 4, they're actually going into the subject mainly of prema bhakti, but more elaborately. And when you get to the level of prema bhakti, then someone who's on that level can maybe give you a course in it. But anyway, it's nice to of course read these other parts, and obviously you can understand some of it, but some of it certainly is quite above our heads. So we won't actually be studying part 2, part 3 and part 4. We won't be studying those. We'll be studying these, and this is what you need. I think you're all getting your Bhakti Shastri degrees, isn't it? So this is the official course for Bhakti Shastri. You have to learn part 1 of Nectar of Devotion. So just having a look again at the list of contents for part 1. There's introduction, and then the first chapter is the characteristics of pure devotional service. So that's just a general introduction. Then chapter 2, up to and including chapter 14. All these subjects here, the first stages of devotion, the eligibility of different people for devotion, how devotional service is very nice, it surpasses liberation, how pure it is, how you discharge it, evidence supporting how valuable it is, how to avoid offenses, how to cultivate the positive activities, and all these different things, different qualifications, different forms of devotional service, which are particularly important. These are all Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Anyone does not know what this term Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti means? You don't know? Okay. So who can tell us, seeing the rest of you know, who can tell us what does the word sadhana mean? What is the English equivalent? Practice. Practice. If you want an English equivalent of the word sadhana, the equivalent, basically, is practice. And Vaidhi means rules and regulations. So Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti means you're practicing bhakti, practicing devotional service according to rules and regulations. So tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow, we'll be going into that subject, or anyway in the next few days, really getting into the subject of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But that's a simple idea of what the term means. Then, anyone does not know, so that's clear to you, right? Okay. Anyone does not know what the term Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti translates to? Anyone else doesn't know? Charmaine doesn't know? So, someone can tell us then what this word Raganuga translates as? Seeing you all, the rest of you know. You're all very humble, aren't you? You can tell us?
Spontaneous.
It can be translated as spontaneous. Yeah. And in fact, if you look in the contents, yeah, we've said that chapters 15 to 16 are discussing that subject, and you'll see Prabhupada has presented it as spontaneous devotional service, and then spontaneous devotion further described. Although literally, the word Raganuga is a compound of two words. Raga means deep attraction, a spontaneous attraction to Krishna, as is found generally in the inhabitants of Vrindavan and some other devotees, but mainly the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And Nuga or Anuga means following. We are called Rupa Nugas. We're also called Prabhupada Anugas. So that means followers of Rupa, followers of Srila Prabhupada. So Raghunuga means, Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti means practicing devotional service, following the inhabitants of Vrindavan, or following those who have a spontaneous attachment to Lord Krishna. So then, Bhava Bhakti, who doesn't know what the word Bhava means? So Bhakti Vaven, will you tell us what the word Bhava means? No. Yeah, but a direct translation is ecstasy. Bhava means ecstasy. It happens to be the preliminary stage of love of God, that's a fact. But the word itself means ecstasy. So, devotional service in ecstasy, bhava bhakti. That is chapters 17 and 18, ecstatic love, and the character of one in ecstatic love, the nature of someone who's on that level. So you can note that bhava bhakti is not within the realms of sadhana bhakti. So what does that mean? That means that the devotee is not practicing in the sense of learning and trying to get it right. The devotee is not practicing in that sense. In other words, it means that the devotee is situated in bhakti, is qualified in bhakti. And as Jai Satchinanda Prabhu said, it's actually the beginning stages of prema. And then prema, of course, means pure love. Devotional service and pure love of Krishna. So that is going to be described nicely, like the basic features of it at least, in the 19th chapter. So bear this in mind as we're going through all these different chapters one by one, and learn it, because in our test we will be requiring you to basically write out more or less exactly what I've written out on the board here. Okay. So there we are. So Srila Rupa Goswami then, he, having heard from Lord Chaitanya, plus having heard from Sanatana Goswami, who he also accepts as being one of his spiritual masters, he has summarized all those teachings in this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that means then, Prabhupada actually took this Nectar of Devotion as being something like a guidebook in devotional service. Now for us, this first part is the most important part of the guidebook. As I said, when you come up to the level of Prema Bhakti, then you can have a course on how to do that. But at this point we have to learn how to practice devotional service, how to cultivate it, how to advance and eventually come to these levels or begin to become. So Prabhupada, he intended particularly these first 19 chapters actually to be like very important material for the guidance of ISKCON devotees. So it's very important that you try to familiarize yourselves with these things. Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami, it's a little bit like Lord Krishna instructing Lord Brahma in terms of Krishna's leela in Vrindavan. Srila Rupa Goswami occupies a very important position as Rupa Manjari, who is the prime assistant, actually. The prime assistant in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So in this way, the prime assistant, in a sense, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, in one sense, the prime assistant is Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami is glorified very much, just like we normally, when we begin class, and it's there in our Mangalacharana prayers at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, we offer certain prayers to Lord Chaitanya, to Rupa Goswami. Any of you know that prayer to Rupa Goswami which appears in Mangalacharana? Speak up. Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitami Anubhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaladatiyam. So, Prabhupada, in talking about the mission of Lord Chaitanya, he said that Rupa Goswami really understood the mission of Lord Chaitanya, and that his understanding and our appreciation of his understanding of the mission of Lord Chaitanya is expressed in that verse in which the devotee is praying that when will I get the mercy of Rupa Goswami, who is absorbed in spreading the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. Just to enhance our appreciation of Rupa Goswami a little bit, I read some nice prayers to him, which are found in Bhakti Ratnakara. Very nice prayers to Rupa Goswami, and actually at the end there's also a couple of prayers to both him and Sanatan Goswami. So try and listen carefully. Try and listen carefully. Very nice prayers. So the author says, the glory of Sri Rupa Goswami is endless, and whoever describes that glory in any form will be praised everywhere. In Chaitanya Chandradoya Natak, Kavi Karnapur states that Rupa Goswami is the most suitable person as the inheritor of the legacy of Swarup Damodar and Srimati Radharani. And he is the resting place of Srimati Radharani. Rupa Goswami is the form of true love and devotion. Lord Chaitanya empowered Rupa Goswami to explain his own love and devotion and propagate that within the world. Lord Chaitanya manifested his own leelas through Sri Rupa. Sadhana Dipika, one of the books of one of the Goswamis, Sadhana Dipika states that the followers of the bhakti cult must not keep company with those who have divorced themselves from Sri Rupa's doctrine on love and devotion. Again and again I worship the lotus feet of Sri Rupa. In Prem Bhakti Chandrika, Narottam Das Thakur says that Rupa has occupied a place in the heart of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And he prays, O my Lord Rupa, please give me a place beneath your feet. Sadhana Dipika also says, O tongue, always sing the name of Sri Rupa. O mind, always remember Rupa, the personification of kindness. O head, always bow down to Sri Rupa, the embodiment of mercy. Simultaneously try to remember Raghunath Das Goswami, the inseparable friend of Rupa. The wonderful attributes of Rupa Goswami have been described by learned men in various ways. If Rupa Goswami were not born in Kali Yuga, who would have distributed love of Krishna throughout the world? Who would have renounced all pleasure, worshipped Vrindavan, and discussed the books of bhakti? Only swans can separate milk from water. So, who could have understood the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan? And who could have explained the love of Radha and Krishna? Sri Krishna is pleased with anyone who attempts to praise him through Rupa. Not only laymen, but even Sri Chaitanya himself liked to praise the qualities of Rupa. It is well known that Rupa Goswami was the life of the associates of the Lord. A large number of the associates of the Lord tried to sing the glories of Rupa and Sanatan, but could not describe them completely. All glories to Rupa and Sanatan, my very life, who gave direction to countless people. They were the only people who understood the Vaishnava practices. Within Vrindavan, they were the reservoirs of natural love and mercy. They were oceans of kindness and friends of the poor. They were the foremost amongst devotees. Only Rupa and Sanatan knew how to behave according to the teachings of the Bhagavat and the other bhakti scriptures. All three worlds praised their character. The dust of their lotus feet cooled the earth from the scorching rays of the sun of Kali. They continually worshipped Sri Vyasadeva and the holy feet of Srimati Radharani. All glories to Rupa and Sanatan, the jewels of all ascetics, who had unflinching were gifts from Lord Chaitanya, the ocean of mercy. And in their absence, I've become an orphan. So very nice prayers, praising Rupa and Sanatan. So now, let's see. We have a few, we'll be doing two sessions a day from 10. First one will be about an hour, and then we'll take a 15-minute break. And then the second one will be for maybe another hour or 45 minutes or so, something like that. So we still have about 15 minutes left here. Let us now turn to the preface. And we'll actually turn to the second page of the preface. It's Roman numerals number 12, XII, and right down at the bottom. Right down at the bottom, Srila Prabhupada gives an explanation about the subject matter. What is the subject matter? Bhakti Rasa. So Prabhupada gives an explanation. What is Bhakti Rasa? Well, Bhakti, we know what that means. But what is Rasa? Yeah, here, there are actually a number of terms which we can use. Generally, Prabhupada used the term mellow. Mellow, in this context, means a very rich and very deep taste. Mellow, I mean, sometimes devotees use the word mellow to mean sort of like relaxed or easygoing. But in this context, mellow means a very rich and very deep taste. So the word taste can also be used. Mellow was referring to taste. And then Prabhupada also used sometimes the word humor. Of course not meaning funny, but meaning a mood. A type of a mood or attitude like that. So, make note of that, because that we will also be asking you about in our test. So now, let us just discuss a little bit what Prabhupada explains in the preface, starting from that point, and then it actually takes up the rest of the preface, basically. He's giving an explanation of what is bhakti, or what is bhakti rasa. So bhakti rasa means the mellow or the very rich and deep taste that is there in bhakti or in devotional service. So the way Prabhupada explains it on page 13, Roman numerals 13, Prabhupada talks about how everyone is getting some sort of taste. The materialists are also getting a taste. But because their taste is material, then they cannot stay fixed. They cannot stay fixed in their particular activities. They may be working, generally they're working hard. But they cannot remain fixed in that, even though they're getting a taste from it. Therefore, on the weekend, what do? They give up their work. They give up their work and they go and do whatever they do on the weekend, try and relax and forget about work. And then they get another taste from that. But then on Monday they go back to work. Prabhupada referred to this as bhoga tyaga, alternating bhoga, sense gratification, and tyaga, renunciation. Not only can they not stay fixed in the working, But they can't stay fixed in the enjoying either. They get bored, and eventually they want to work. So, in this way we can understand that the rasa, so to speak, the mellow or the taste of material activity is temporary. So therefore, people are always changing their position. But the devotees who are experiencing the bhakti rasa, if you turn over to page Roman numeral 14, Prabhupada explains there that the bhakti rasa, it doesn't finish with the end of life, it continues perpetually during this life. If one is absorbed in bhakti, then one will not want to change one's position. One will want to just stay engaged in bhakti. One will not, if one is nicely engaged in bhakti, one will not feel that on Friday afternoon or so, one will not feel that, okay, I worked hard all week, I went on Sankirtan, I worshipped the deities, I cooked or whatever I may have done. So I did my bhakti, now it's Friday, and I'm tired of all that bhakti. So now I'm going to go out and, you know, go to the beach and just sort of fool around as people do on the weekends. But actually, because of that bhakti rasa, because that rasa is actually a very deep and rich and sweet and wonderful taste, the devotees can remain fixed in bhakti all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, all their lives. And then Prabhupada is saying here, even beyond the end of this life. In other words, bhakti rasa is eternal. And one who becomes absorbed in bhakti rasa also comes to the eternal platform. Now, we're also just to try and encourage you all to get a deeper understanding. We don't want to overload you, but we're going to also ask you sometimes to do a little homework. So our first little bit of homework for tonight is, if you would please summarize how Srila Prabhupada explains bhakti rasa, starting right there on page 12, Roman numeral 12, right at the very, very bottom, that where Prabhupada says bhakti means devotional service, from that point to the end of the preface. Or let's say, not the end of the preface, but Roman numeral 16. Can you all read Roman numerals? XVI. So halfway down the page, the paragraph ends. So now, when we say summarize, what we're looking for, we would like you to get the main points, which are there, and we would like you to write about two or three paragraphs. Two or three paragraphs means not more than a page. Probably half a page to a page, something of that sort. You don't mind doing that, do you? Okay. I don't want to be a slave driver or something like that. Because then I have to read all of them and mark them all myself. So, you know, I'm the one who really has to do the work. But anyway, it is a fact that this is a very important subject. Actually, this is like the essence of the subject matter of the whole book. So from the outset, we should try to get a reasonable understanding of what is the subject we're dealing with. So is that clear? From the bottom of page 12 through to halfway down page 16. And we're looking for about half a page, two-thirds, maybe three-quarters. If you're running over one page, then I think you're writing too much. Just a very brief summary of the main points, like to give you an idea to start off with. Prabhupada begins on page 12, then going on to page 13, by explaining the material rasa. So you can write a sentence, perhaps two sentences, explaining what is the nature of the material rasa. Working hard, changing position, flickering happiness, and so on, all for some sort of taste. Then Prabhupada also gives like the basic definition of rasa. It's about 8 or 9 lines down from the top of page 13, so you should also note that. Bhakti rasa. Rasa means a kind of mellow, whose taste is very sweet. And then bhakti rasa, of course, is different from this other rasa. And then on page 14, Prabhupada describes the basic nature of bhakti rasa and so on. So is everyone clear? Is anyone not clear on what we're looking for here? So, just last little bit before we take our first break. I'll read something. It's on page 14, the last paragraph towards the bottom of the page. Page 14. This eternal engagement in bhakti rasa can be understood by a serious student upon studying the nectar of devotion. Adoption of bhakti rasa or Krishna consciousness will immediately bring one to an auspicious life, free from anxieties, and will bless one with transcendental existence, thus minimizing the value of liberation. Bhakti rasa itself is sufficient to produce a feeling of liberation because it attracts the attention of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Generally, neophyte devotees are anxious to see Krishna or God, but God cannot be seen or known by our present materially blunt senses. There was one well-known politician who lives, I don't know if he's still a politician, but he lives on Road 601. Not mentioning any names. And his good wife, they're sort of, you know, Hindu people, into being Hindu people, basically. So his wife would sometimes tell us how practically every night she would dream of Krishna, and sometimes she was even dancing with Krishna. But devotees don't take this sort of thing very seriously. Therefore Prabhupada says, generally neophyte devotees are anxious to see Krishna. But we cannot, with these materially blunt senses, don't expect. Of course, we see the deity, and the deity is actually Krishna. But otherwise, we can't really expect to see Krishna so easy, just like that. The process of devotional service, as it's recommended in Nectar of Devotion, will gradually elevate one from the material condition of life to the spiritual status, wherein the devotee becomes purified of all designations. The senses can then become uncontaminated, being constantly in touch with bhakti rasa. In other words, as one is engaging in one's devotional activities, one is in contact with this bhakti rasa, and one is becoming purified. So when the purified senses, when you've advanced, in other words, when the purified senses are employed in the service of the Lord, one becomes situated in bhakti rasa life, and any action performed for the satisfaction of Krishna in this transcendental bhakti rasa stage of life can be relished perpetually. When one is thus engaged in devotional service, all varieties of rasas or mellows turn into eternity. In the beginning, one is trained according to the principles of regulation under the guidance of the acharya or spiritual master. And gradually, when one is elevated, devotional service becomes automatic and spontaneous eagerness to serve Krishna. There are 12 kinds of rasas, as will be explained in this book. Well, we're not really going to go into all of them so much. And by renovating our relationship with Krishna in 5 primary rasas, we'll be talking about the 5 primary rasas to some extent, we can live eternally in full knowledge and bliss. So that is what our course is about. Bhakti rasa. Coming to the level of eternal life full of bliss. Okay, so any comments or questions yet? At this point? Alright, so it's about 11 now. Let us take a break for 15 minutes and everyone come back and then we'll carry on from this point. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Please let us now get back to Nectar of Devotion. So now we're going to go through some parts of the introduction. So that is page 19, Roman numerals 19. And each paragraph here, at least the first page and second page of the introduction, each paragraph, on those two pages at least, is more or less a direct translation of a verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, with the exception of the second paragraph, which is... Anyway, it's based on a verse, the second verse. The first paragraph is more or less a direct translation of the first verse. And the first line of the very first verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is important. It's very important.
I hope you can read my writing.
So this is actually the first line of the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Rasamrita Sindhu.
And what does it say? It's explaining what is like the essence, or what is the underlying thing which is there in this ocean, which makes it Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And who is, what is that? That is Krishna. Oops, wait a minute, we made a mistake. It's not Akira Rasamrita Sindhu. It's... Akira Rasamrita Murti. With an H. With an H. Akila Rasamrita Murti. Who is the form of this ocean of nectar? Where do you find this ocean of nectar? In the form of Krishna. So therefore you see in the introduction, Prabhupada writes that Lord Krishna, Lord Shri Krishna, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cause of all causes, and he is the reservoir of all rasas. And how does he, or Rupa Goswami, actually Prabhupada's translating Rupa Goswami, how does Rupa Goswami make the point that Krishna is the reservoir of all rasas, and the topmost feature of all rasas and enjoyer of all rasas? He refers to Krishna's relationships with the gopis. three categories of gopis. Prabhupada actually only really refers to it as two, but it's actually three. Taraka and Palika are one group, then Shama and Lalita, and then ultimately Srimati Radharani. So of course rasa, that mellow taste, bhakti rasa, the mellow taste of bhakti is found in and in relation to any form of the Lord. But the akila rasamrita murti, akila means all, universal, the totality. So the totality, the form of the totality of the nectar of bhakti rasa is in Krishna. Krishna is that form. Prabhupada elsewhere explains that Lord Narayan, he's more like a high court judge, someone like that, very official, formal, important person. But then when the judge goes home, then the judge relaxes at home, he has his children there, he has very affectionate relationships with, he has his friends, he has his wife and parents, and he has all these different affectionate, loving relationships which are much more intimate and much more personal than in his features the big high court judge who's very important and respected so much. So Prabhupada explains that Krishna is God at home. He's at home. And when he's at home, he's very nice and affectionate like that. In other features, Narayan and all the various other Vaikuntha deities like that, and generally all the avatars coming from Vishnu, they're in this Narayan mood, the big authorities. But Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti, the form of all rasas and the nectar of all rasas of bhakti, because he's God at home. He's completely manifest, including that sweet nature. Then, I won't go so much into the other verses here, but we'll see in the second paragraph, Prabhupada's offering his obeisances. He's undertaking this great work of writing Nectar of Devotion, so he offers his obeisances to Rupa Goswami and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Third paragraph, he's translating basically Rupa Goswami's third verse, in which Rupa Goswami is offering his obeisances to Sanatan Goswami, spiritual master. Fourth verse is quite interesting. Prabhupada's basically translating Rupa Goswami again, that he's offering obeisances to all the devotees. He just offered obeisances to a spiritual master. So now he offers obeisances to all the devotees, particularly the acharyas and the sampradaya, the very important devotees. And he describes them as being something like sharks. Sharks. And where do you find these sharks? Oh, yes, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Of course. They're in the ocean itself. And this image, this example of the sharks is very significant. Prabhupada doesn't really mention it so much. It's referred to, but there are three main reasons why Rupa Goswami uses this image, this idea of sharks. One is that sharks live only in the ocean. You don't find them in the rivers. Rivers mean those bodies of water which are moving towards the ocean, but they find their rest in the ocean, and the sharks are in the ocean. So the sharks live only in the ocean. The sharks reject the rivers. They don't care for the rivers. The paths like karma, jnana, yoga, impersonal processes, they don't care. there in the ocean, and the ocean, of course, is Akila Rasamritam Murti, the very form of that Bhakti Rasa is Krishna. So they're always absorbed in Krishna. So the sharks live only in the ocean, the sharks reject the rivers, and thirdly, the sharks are never caught by the fishermen, by the fishermen's nets, because they're swimming very deep and they're very powerful. So what are the fishermen's nets? That's Maya, the snares of Maya. So the acharyas are like big, powerful sharks, and they're swimming deep in the ocean, and the fishermen, Maya, can never touch them. Then the next paragraph, it's sort of like a request for a benediction or a benediction. He's just saying that may this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu never be touched by the mental speculators and people like that who'll interfere with it. And he compares the ideas of the mental speculators about spiritual philosophy as being like volcanic eruptions in the ocean. Volcanic eruption is very big, but when it's out in the middle of the ocean, it doesn't really affect anything. So this ocean of the nectar of devotion is so deep and so profound that even if the mental speculators argue this way and that, it's not going to have any effect. But still, Rupa Goswami is saying that may they just leave us alone anyway. Then, next paragraph, he is offering a prayer on his own behalf. What is he trying to do? He's just trying to serve the Lord and spread his message. Prabhupada says a very nice thing in this purport. Fourth line down, Rupa Goswami is saying how he feels himself unfit for this important service of spreading Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada says that should be the attitude of all the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. We should never think of ourselves as great preachers, but always consider that we're simply instruments for the previous acharyas. And in this way, if we act as instruments very humbly, as servants, then we may do something. We may be able to help, actually. Then, the last paragraph on page 20 is another verse. It's another verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and it's about the structure of the book. And the only point I'll mention there is that those four divisions that we wrote on the board, the introduction, then sadhana bhakti, then bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti, they're described actually, that's the eastern portion, the whole lot together, part one. That's the eastern portion of the ocean, and these four subdivisions are the four waves. They're the four waves in the eastern division. First wave is the introduction, second wave is the wave of sadhana bhakti, and like that. Then, the rest of the introduction, the entire rest of the introduction, which is 4.5 pages, is devoted to explaining one verse. That verse is called the Parivas Sutra. Make a note of this, because this is also going to be in the test, and this is very important. The Parivas Sutra. Every Vaishnava book has its Parivas Sutra, generally at least, or maybe a couple of verses together. In most cases, it's one verse. So Parivas Sutra means the message of that whole book in one sutra, in one verse, in one concise statement. The Parivas Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam is Canto 1, Chapter 3, Verse 28. Ete Chamsa Kalapumsta, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. And so on. So that's the Paribas Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam. The message of Srimad Bhagavatam is contained in a nutshell in that one verse. So, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, it also has a Paribas Sutra. And that is, make a note of this.